The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We are in our 7 o'clock hour here on the morning shift, and Falcons season, it is over. We have heard from Coach Raheem Morris. He addressed the media at a press conference yesterday. One of the things that he was asked was if he regrets not putting in Michael Penix sooner.
You know, it's never like a regret thing. You got to make the decisions. You got to do them when you think they're the right way. And when a decision was made is when I felt like the team played really well outside of our quarterback position, and that's when I made the change. And when you make that change, it's hard to say you regret it because you had a lot of confidence in the guy that was out there before, and we just were able to get it done, unable to get it done. And you got to make those decisions, and we're putting this vision to make decisions. I'm in the decision-making process, and I made a decision when I did, gave us the best chance I thought to win. And so that was the decision at the time. So it's hard to say regret, but the kid's in a good spot.
See, that's the one thing he said there was when we were playing as well as we could outside of the quarterback position. And if you break it down a little bit more, to me, it's when you had to game plan around your own quarterback for what he could or couldn't do, and mainly couldn't do, I should say, that's when the decision had to be made. And I don't think that – I think it built, and then it hit a peak in the Raiders game, right? And that's why people say that he should have done it earlier. Based on what?
Revisionist history.
Well, it's really just people grandstanding. It's just I'm going to get on this hill and I'm going to die on it because that's what I want to do, and I'm going to use a false narrative to back me up. There are no, there's nothing really backing it up that you should have done it before the Raiders game. The Raiders, he played bad, but he didn't play terrible in Minnesota.
He went for almost 350 in Minnesota.
You didn't lose in Minnesota because of him. You lost in Minnesota because it's a 21-all game. They go down and score. Now it's 28-21, and Ray McLeod fumbles the kickoff, which, funny enough, he's no longer on kickoffs the last two games of the year.
Yeah.
But he fumbles the kickoff, and then they score again. Ball game's over. Because Now he goes down and he's forcing stuff because there's no other option. He's trying to make a play to get you back in the game. So this revisionist history that he should have done it before he did is honestly ignorance from the people saying it.
Well, and I agree. To me, it feels like a national narrative. Like, it doesn't, because I think the people that watch.
Don't tell this, Alex Smith that. He's very angry that he did it too soon.
Well, I think the people that watch this team, well, and he's national, so it kind of goes back to my point. The people that watch this team, even the Falcons fans that are down on Raheem or were down on the Kirk signing or were down on drafted Penix, whatever it is, whatever you're down on, I think even most Falcons fans would agree that the timing was right. Now, I think, you know, you and I kind of made the point, or at least I did, that you could have done it against Las Vegas before they took the field against Las Vegas, but that's because of the interceptions and everything else. And I can see why Raheem would have looked at the Las Vegas game as an opportunity for Kirk to kind of prove that he's the guy for the stretch run. And that's what it comes down to. We all look at it as this is an opportunity to get Penix in an easy starter game. You know, it is on the road, but it's not a tough defense against Las Vegas, and you kind of get it done. And Raheem's looking at it saying, Kirk's a two-time NFC Offensive Player of the Week. This is a guy we're paying a lot of money to. This is his opportunity to kind of get back on track. And when that didn't happen, I think we all saw the writing on the wall, and it was like, now's the time.
And the only thing you could really critique is say, well, why didn't you do it in the middle of the Raiders game? You could have done it there. That would have been the only thing that I could have said because of how bad you were playing offensively. But even there, it's like, why not give him the full week of knowing he's a starter?
I was going to say.
In which they did. So I don't know. I've heard it in the local media that he didn't do it soon enough. And it bugs me there because it's like, you guys are just trying to...
It's a no-win situation.
If he didn't play well, you wouldn't be saying that. So it's...
That's the point.
I know.
If he lights it up against the Raiders, Tiff, to your point, you're like, hey, he just went in a funk, and you got to give credit to the head coach for not bailing on his guy. But instead, it's just the whole thing where, oh, no, because then you become trigger happy.
Is it weird for me to look at it like knowing what I know from the last 3 weeks, knowing what I know about going into the next season, knowing what I know about the way the season ended? Is it strange for me to look at it and say it's probably a good thing that Kirk didn't play well against Las Vegas? Because at that point, I think if he lights it up against Las Vegas, he's probably going to be the starter down the stretch.
Well, and then he's
Kirk, and then he's our starter throughout this entire offseason, and it feels like
but
it is inevitable.
If he comes out of it against the Raiders, you don't know how this. I'm not saying they had a better chance with the early season Kirk Cousins to beat Washington or not. What I'm telling you is you don't know how it plays out. I think the good thing is the three games I saw from Michael Penix, and forgive me for what I'm about to say, but the three games I saw from Michael Penix has me feeling a lot better than the four games I saw from Desmond Ridder in 2022.
Oh, you said right. Because, I didn't know you were going
to go there. Well, because it's very similar. Everyone criticized Arthur saying you should have went to Desmond Ridder sooner to see what you had, which I, again, think is another one where I do think he probably stuck with Mariota a game too long. But other than that, some people wanted it midseason. To the same effect that, with Desmond, that you did he stick with him too long? Well, you didn't have much behind him either because Heinicke wasn't very good either. But I just feel better because what I saw from Michael Penix was a guy that had no fear. I mean, the caller called in yesterday, guys, and he said, well, he didn't put the ball in harm's way. I completely disagree. I think he put the ball in harm's way quite a few times. The difference is, he can make those throws.
I was going to say.
He can put the ball in harm's way.
The difference is he's not under 33 miles an hour.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of throws that even Brian Baldinger did on his Baldy's breakdown, Steph. You shouldn't throw that ball if you have an average arm.
Yeah.
Because it's probably intercepted.
Yeah.
But because he has an elite. The throw to Kadarius Hodge.
Insane.
Was as sick of a throw as you can make. The throw to Kyle Pitts against
also
Washington.
Also a phenomenal catch, too.
Yeah. The throw to the tight end, I almost called him by his name. The throw to the tight end against Washington, unreal. And if you go back and look, the throw to Drake London to tie the game, what tied it at 38 on 3rd and 20 was the same throw, just a little bit different coverage, and he was outside of the end zone.
Right, different window.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, kind of going back to my point, don't you feel great about Michael Penix moving forward? You kind of have to. I look forward to a year when we're not talking about a quarterback change mid-year. This is the third year in a row that we've had this happen. And my point is that if Kirk Cousins had played well against a terrible Las Vegas Raiders team, that we might have just punted that for a year. Like we might be going into next year saying Kirk's our guy. You know, we're paying him for this second year. After that, we're kind of out from under that umbrella, and we'll see what Michael Penix has. And I think you would be dealing with the same situation a year from now, where Kirk had made it through the season and then fell off and then had his struggles, and Zach Robinson didn't have answers. And then at the end of next season, you're looking at a situation where now you're finding out what Michael Penix is. Now, Raheem's seat is on fire and everything else that could have gone on with that. So in hindsight, one of the ways I've kind of digested this season is it was probably the best timing possible, for Kirk to fall flat and Michael Penix to be inserted into this lineup.
You're excited about the Falcons' offense in the future. Lots of people should be. So is Michael Penix. We heard from him earlier. And so is Coach Raheem Morris.
This is 100% an awful day. Hate it, right? And it's disappointing. And the results and what we got and for our fans and for us is disappointing, but when you look at those guys on the offensive side of the ball, it does create a certain urgency and a certain excitement for you personally. And this is a disappointing day because you want those guys to be able to showcase that at a high level. And we'll get there, you know, and it's our job to get there, and we have to get there. But it's certainly a disappointing day when you know you don't get a chance to do that.
Yeah, the urgency, I want to touch on the urgency thing you talk about with Michael and Drake and Bijan, because that's now your three-headed monster. Whatever you think, you know, you have some secondary players. Like Darnell Mooney, guys, Darnell Mooney plays Sunday.
Difference maker.
He, well, you know, he had his shoulder, he's a different, but he's a 1,000-yard receiver if he plays Sunday.
Yeah.
Imagine that. 1,000-yard receiver. You would have 2,000-yard receivers. That would have been, like, I mean, that's crazy to think from where we were just a year ago offensively. But it's a three-headed monster because you look at Drake's season, 100 yards, I think almost 1,300 yards receiving, 9 touchdowns, came into the year with 6 total in his career. But that's a three-headed monster. But these guys are performing, and they're going to get paid in a couple of years, all of them. So there's urgency to maybe win with them because you might not be able to keep all three. And that's the thing that you're going to have to worry about. And that's why you also need to figure out how to draft young defensive talent so you can kind of complement them if they're getting paid, where you have young complementary defensive talent.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's obviously the theory moving forward. When you look at the core you have because of the way you've drafted over the last few years and the way you've signed offensive linemen and really developed offensive linemen inside of the scheme, I want to make sure I continue to use the term develop. And you know that that's an important word for me when we talk about drafting these guys. You know, the term bust gets thrown around, but I don't think we talk about developing guys. And I think you've seen that a little bit this year with Sam Darnold, Jared Goff, some of the other players that have had to move place. Baker Mayfield's a prime example. Think about Cleveland. They had to move on from Baker Mayfield. People are calling him a bust. He, you know, throws 40-plus touchdowns this year. I think the second most touchdowns passes in the league behind Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
And look at where Cleveland's at because of it, because they can't develop quarterbacks.
Well, and that was the fact that they used the word bust with him in Cleveland, I thought was unfair. Didn't he win a playoff game there? Isn't he the only quarterback that's won a playoff game in Cleveland since they came back? Or, you know, so I don't know how that's the guy that you want to call a bust. I think what Vic Beasley was outside of 1 year is a bust. What the tight end here right now outside of 1 year is on the – that's what it looks like. And you, that's when you question guys want to as far as that, that's what it is. But, you know, not developing – I agree with you. Not developing players doesn't – when you see guys go other places because they weren't developed correctly or there wasn't a strength and conditioning program that could elevate them or that – that's why – I think the term, to your point, the term bust is just used judgmentally at times.
Yeah.
Up next, we've got CBS analyst Charles Davis joining us. He was on the call for the Falcons and Panthers' final game of the season. Stay with us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. We're back here on the Morning Shift, just rolling along. We had quite an interesting game on Sunday between the Falcons and Panthers to close out the season. It was a high-scoring affair, but the Falcons ultimately dropping it in overtime. We do have our guests on the line, but Dylan keeps hamming it up with him because he's so easy to talk to. We're going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find CBS NFL analyst Charles Davis joining us here on the show. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Tiffany. Good morning, guys. How's everyone?
Doing well.
We are doing good. Charles, you were on the call for that Falcons-Panthers game with Ian Eagle and Evan Washburn. There's a lot of disappointment, as you probably can anticipate here, in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Just what went wrong for the Falcons in that game?
Oh, boy, that's a great one, Tiffany. Trying to narrow that down probably would take us a lot longer than you have for your show.
Defense? You want to start with the defense, Charles?
Because you can start there, but you can also just go with – just how they started in general. Like, I think that you go into a game like that, you know what your stakes are, you know you have to take care of your own business first, you've spent all your time talking about we'll focus on us and the rest of it has to take care of itself, but you actually have to believe it and then you have to perform to that level. It almost felt like they didn't believe that the Saints could do it, so is this really a big deal to us? It almost felt that way early. Then they kind of got going. They got into it, and then and things started to happen for them, and now we have a game going on. But as you noted, the defense just could not really get the stops they needed against Carolina. And then I guess the best way for me to describe it and to understand it as best I can is sometimes when you go into a game and you're expected to blow someone out or you're expected to really dominate, when you don't early, it flips on you. Now you tighten up. Now every possession, every snap, man, we haven't killed these guys yet. What's going on? And it flips, and Carolina got to play looser and looser, and Atlanta played tighter and tighter. And it's funny because Tampa didn't blow New Orleans either. Right? Tampa had to play from behind most of the game. I think for both of those teams who were in positions of we have to win to achieve our goals, while the other two had no goals left other than to get to the offseason, sometimes that works against you when you're the favorite.
And Charles, the bright spot for us was that we kind of got a glimpse into the future, the 9-to-5 combination of Michael Penix and Drake London. But that's, you know, his third.
I like that.
Right? It's his. Well, I got to give Wes Durham credit. He coined that during our broadcast. But what was what did you see from Michael Penix in his third start?
Well, before I even get to that, I'm gonna give Wes the credit. Wes being the good wordsmith that he is. The other part, though, is Wes and I are old dudes, so I'm wondering if the younger fans of the Falcons will understand the 9-to-5 other than uniform number. You know what I'm saying? Like, we get it. You know, we know the song. We know Dolly, the whole deal. But the younger fans are probably like, yeah, not number 9 to number 5. That's cool. And then us older fans will start singing the song. They look at us like we're crazy. But all that being said, with Penix, everything that they've talked about all the way through, it all kicked in. I had talked about this with our crew before the game. Coach Bill Parcells, you remember years ago he had that famous so-called quarterback formula of what he wanted of a kid coming out of college? Yeah. Wanted 30 starts. He wanted, you know, 24 wins or something like that. You know, he wanted him to be a captain. He wanted this. He wanted that. He had this checklist of things that he wanted in a quarterback. And it kind of became kind of a loose model that we followed. Well, as we got two guys coming out of school early, right, when you know, Sam Darnold was a redshirt sophomore when he came out. When those things started to happen, Mark Sanchez only had, 15, 16 starts. You know, Anthony Richardson, 13 starts coming out of Florida. That model kind of got turned on its head. Like, I remember saying, guys, I don't know if we're going to have this model much anymore because how are you going to tell a kid who's going to be a top 5 pick, you got to stay in school to fit a model? You're not. It's not going to happen. So you got to train them in the NFL. But we had a very unusual year because COVID gripped our world and changed things. And extra eligibility, throw in NIL, where you might stay in school longer because the money is fine. Now, Bo Nix has 61 college starts coming out of Oregon and, of course, Auburn. Michael Penix has 45 coming out of Indiana and Washington, plus big-time success playing the national championship game. Beat Bo Nix twice in the same season. You see where I'm going with this. We're getting the mature model now. Now plug that into he had to sit around for all that time, absorb, and learn. And he actually did it. He didn't sulk in the corner that he wasn't playing. He didn't say, trade me now because you drafted me number one. He went about his business the right way. And then the talent came through. So we're seeing a lot more of that now because every other quarterback was Caleb Williams was a 3-year starter at USC and won a Heisman. Drake May, 3-year starter at North Carolina. We're getting the better experienced guys coming out, not to mention Jaden Daniels is going to be rookie of the year. 5 years in college, 2 different schools, and he survived Brian Kelly as his quarterback's coach and head coach. If you can do that, you're ready for anything because BK – is hard on his quarterback now.
Charles, I think you bring up a couple good points. Charles Davis, CBS Sports, hanging out with us. I think you bring up a couple good points, and I actually want to go back to last year's number one overall pick just for a second because obviously Bryce Young was one of the highlights of this game. Frustrating to watch for Falcons fans, but to your point, one, you know, started a couple years for Nick Saban, won a Heisman. He looked as comfortable as we've seen him look. So I guess the thing I've kind of wrestled with the last 2 days, the last 48 hours, is how much credit do we need to give Bryce Young as opposed to how much we need to talk about the Atlanta Falcons defense on Sunday?
I think it's a combo. It's a combo plate. But here's the thing, guys. I don't know how this happened. It's one of those really weird years. That was the fourth time we'd seen Carolina as a TV group. Fourth time.
Wow.
We didn't expect to see them once. Okay? We saw them four times. So when we saw them, Andy Dalton was the starting quarterback. And then he got hurt in a car accident, and it was Bryce Young's show from there on. And we got to see kind of the development, maturation, not week in and week out, but three different times. And here's what I observed in a nutshell. When you look at Bryce Young, and he looks like you could put him in your back pocket and go down the street, right? Charles. You say to yourself, you've got to go and get some pressure in this kid. Like, I'm getting after him like nobody's business. And Steve Spagnuolo in Kansas City, as you guys know, Spags is the master of it. I actually talked to Spags after, you know, the week after the game. They came at that kid like you would not believe, and the kid kept foiling them. He kept beating their blitzes, standing in the pocket. It wasn't running at him. He'd stand in there, take a step left, take a step right, take a step up, and make great throws downfield. And it was like Spags just didn't believe his own eyes. And finally, he's like, no. Biggest play of the game. Go get him. Said like seven. Still didn't get it. And we watched this. It wasn't just Spags. If you go back and check his numbers for the year, you'll be in shock how well he played versus pressure. And I think that's been the biggest thing for him, is that coming after being benched and coming back, he got his confidence somewhere and built it slowly and really saw play go up and success, even if they weren't winning as many games. He started making play after play after play. His teammates believed in him. He believed in himself. And let's face it, guys, the thing that's working its way around was the touchdown pass to Tremble, where he threw it and turned around with a big grin on his face and didn't even see the ball go into Tremble's hands, right? And I said it's like Steph Curry hitting a three and turning around and what have you. And it's gotten a little bit of play. But I didn't say it to get play. I said it because now I'm seeing Bryce Young from Alabama. Now I'm seeing the Heisman Trophy winner. Now I'm seeing the kid who went number one overall. And you know what else, folks? Patience for the rest of us. Remember last year? Oh, boy, they messed up. They should have taken C.J. Stroud, conveniently forgetting that everyone dumped on C.J. Stroud in the draft process. The S2 thing, he was terrible in that. Oh, at Ohio State, never beat anybody good. The only game we saw him put, the Georgia game first. Remember? Everybody remember that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he had a great rookie year. There's no taking that away. He was terrific. I'm going to throw one thing at you, and I'm not saying this to make Bryce Young better than C.J. Stroud, because I'm not saying that at all. C.J.'s been terrific. But this season, C.J. Stroud started the whole year. 21 total touchdowns for C.J. 19 touchdown passes, one run. Bryce Young, and now in 10 starts to finish the year, 21 total touchdowns.
Hey, Charlie.
Now, does that mean he's better? The answer is no. But right. What I'm saying is, let's have some patience. Let's get the right people around him. The coaching for him this year was better than the coaching last year. It's obvious that it works better for him for whatever reason. I'm not saying the other guys are bad coaches. Just this works better for him. And let's see what the future brings, what Dan Morgan, the GM, can bring to put around him. Because he still needs a lot of help. They don't have anyone that scares you on offense other than, they don't have anyone that scares you on offense. They just don't.
Charles, got about 30 seconds. Who's your MVP?
Oh, God. Look, Lamar Jackson is going to get dinged because he's won it twice, and people are always looking for an alternative. It's kind of like what Michael Jordan was playing. To me, Patrick Mahomes is Michael Jordan. He's the MVP every year, even if the numbers aren't there. He's that guy. But who's going to rent it out this year? Lamar's got the numbers. But if you remember when the season began, everybody was thinking this was the year Buffalo was vulnerable. Josh Allen has pulled a Patrick Mahomes this year and carried a team that shouldn't be good enough. I think Allen's going to win it. I would go to sleep and be fine with either one of them. And Burrow has a real case for Offensive Player of the Year, fighting it out with Saquon Barkley because of where they were defensively. So it's going to be fun to see. I think Allen's going to win it, guys, because the story kind of wins that thing. But Lamar, good Lord. And if Lamar finally gets through and wins this thing, wow, that'd be a season for the ages.
You're right about that, Charles. Hey, we appreciate the time. Hopefully I'll get to see you soon.
I certainly hope so, and it's great to talk with you guys, and let's all make 2025 a special one for us, okay?
Mm. Let's go.
Good stuff.
Thanks,
appreciate you, Charles. That was Charles
Thank
Davis.
You. You guys be good.
You too. That was Charles Davis, NFL analyst for CBS Sports. We will be right back here for a Mic'd Up. We're also going in the huddle. There's a lot of NFL news developing right now. This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. We are back here on the morning shift, getting ready to go in the huddle. Football coverage on Sports Radio 929 The Game is brought to you by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on an iPhone 16 Pro. Lots of NFL news to get to that has been developing this morning. And we can start with the Cowboys because Coach Mike McCarthy's contract is set to expire tomorrow. And the Bears have put in a request to interview him.
Makes a lot of sense to me. I think that he's still believed in many NFL circles. And I think his own team evidently believes in him. You know, the way that they played down the stretch, they played hard. So he's proven obviously that he can get it done inside of that division. And it seems to me like, I know that you hated the word retreads, but he's not a retread.
Hold
to
on.
Me, he's a guy.
Retread?
Yeah.
Well, I was hearing the word, I kept hearing people hit me up and saying fire Raheem and get a proven NFL coach.
Yeah.
That's what I would call him, right?
Well,
he's more of a proven NFL coach. Guy's got a Super Bowl. He's won.
Well, I mean, dude, that's like calling Doug Peterson a proven NFL coach.
This guy's won 175 games.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be proven? I mean, where does the retread
–
where does the retread proven –
you're getting me off track because I was just pointing to the fact that you hate the word retread.
I do hate it.
But I don't think – my point was going to be that he doesn't really fit in that category. He's still not under contract. He's still under contract for, what, another week? Another 2 weeks? I don't even know what it is. But
it expires tomorrow.
But they have to have permission to talk to him before the 14th, I think, if I read correctly. My point here, I know, and I apologize for cutting into you. But the same people, this is what irks me about the retread thing, and you're not saying this, but what irks me about it is the same people out of one side of their mouth say they don't want a retread. On the other side say, well, I want a proven head coach. Yeah. Well, what the hell is a retread then?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Mike McCarthy essentially will lose his second NFL job if they do not try to re-sign him in Dallas. Whether it's because they fired him or they let his contract expire, they didn't want him there anymore. So what is the difference? Because I hate and that's what bothers me is look, we all are going to say things somewhat hypocritical, but the hypocrisy out of people's mouths that say they want a proven head coach, but they don't want a retread. It's the same damn thing.
I just, for the life of me, cannot think of where you would be going if you were Jerry Jones right here. Like in this spot, if you're going to let Mike McCarthy walk in quote-unquote free agency or, you know, whatever else you want to call it. I can't for the life of me think of where you're going if you're Jerry Jones. There's going to be comments about Steve Sarkisian. There's going to be comments about a lot of other guys.
Well, like,
I don't know.
What about the guy in Houston, the OC down there?
Bobby Slowick.
Yeah, Slowick. Or what about Ben Johnson or Aaron Glenn?
Ben Johnson will probably be the prize of this offseason.
What about Brian Flores?
Could be a good one. Could be a good move for a lot of people. But, again, he's had NFL opportunities.
He's a retread?
Other developments that have happened this morning. When you look at the Colts, defensive coordinator Gus Bradley, they have fired him. The Seahawks have parted ways with offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb. The Bengals parting ways with offensive coordinator Lou Anarumo. And, that's the latest that's been added to NFL.com's tracker there. I can also let you know, too, that offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey and offensive line coach Andy Dickerson have also been let go for the Browns.
Yeah, there is a lot of people, a contingent of Bama fans that are hoping Ryan Grubb makes his way. But remember, Ryan Grubb was in Tuscaloosa for about 24 hours last offseason. And then he got hired back in Seattle, never even had to move his family. I don't know if his family ever made it to Tuscaloosa before he had to turn back around and go back to Seattle. And then he's there for 1 year and gets let go. They obviously became very one-dimensional at times this year. So I don't think it was a big shock to see him be let go. But there's Bama fans that are kind of clamoring for Ryan Grubb to be back down in Tuscaloosa, met back up with Kalen DeBoer. I don't know what's going to happen, but you know, that's a job that I have to think that you'd feel pretty good about taking if you were an OC kind of looking to climb the ladder. I think Geno Smith is a guy that needs a guy to kind of plug in and you know, be a force in that offense.
I wonder if they could be a surprise team to take a quarterback to develop. They didn't take one last year, did they?
No.
I wonder if they could take one of these.
They signed the Washington, Sam Howell.
Yeah. What would you think about if you're Seattle, you're going to be drafting late? Maybe, you know, Carson Beck's going to be out for a year probably, right? Or at least, I guess Brock Purdy had that UCL surgery, and he played he played the same season. So what if he played in that Super Bowl? So that was this year. That was the NFC Championship games when he tore it. They played in that season. They go to the Super Bowl last year. The next season.
Yeah, it was the next season.
What if you're a team like Seattle, and if Carson Beck's around late in the first round, or maybe he's there in the teens, and you know you're obviously going to be drafting somewhere. You're around there anyways. Maybe take a flyer on a guy like that. Let him sit a year.
I don't think it's a bad idea. And look, we've talked a little bit about Baker Mayfield, and there's become this middle contingent of teams that sign these kind of, not, I don't want to call them mid-tier quarterbacks, these more cost-efficient quarterbacks like a Geno Smith, and then try to develop guys behind them.
Geno's only 34.
Yeah.
All right, the Patriots, we know, have parted ways. Robert Kraft making that decision to fire Gerard Mayo after just one season there. And Kraft did address the media. He said, "This whole situation is on me. I feel terrible for Gerard because I put him in an untenable situation. I know that he has all the tools as a head coach to be successful in this league. He just needed more time before taking the job. In the end, I am a fan of this team first, and now I have to go out and find a coach who can get us back to the playoffs and hopefully championships."
Yeah,
I felt like they had regressed.
I think, and I had heard some stuff come up from up there that a lot of people in the building loved him, but it became kind of a disaster. And even some people, I guess the thought around there was that he'll be a great head coach one day. Not just Robert Kraft's words, but somebody in the building had said that. So, like, luckily for him, he'll get more opportunities. He's a good defensive coach. Obviously, the name that is being touted up there is former Patriot Mike Vrabel, former head coach of the Titans. Very, you know, had some successful years. I don't know where he falls on the proven or retread thing, but he's a guy that'll be out there. So I think Robert Kraft's got to build a team. But the good thing about that job is whoever takes it looks like they have the makings of a franchise quarterback, because Drake May got
a lot of money to play with too.
Yeah, I think it was like $160 million or something.
Know.
I heard
it's insane amount of money, and yeah. That's one of the things. You know, that's one of the people pushing back on the Gerard Mayo firing is like, you didn't give him any tools to succeed. But then again, you want your franchise to look a certain way, I guess. And Robert Kraft falls on the sword yesterday and says, you know, time to move on. So
I could see. I don't know what the future is for Matthew Judon, like, financially in the league, but I could see him going. I could see him landing back in New England if, like, a Mike Vrabel goes up there. So
yeah,
we told you some news yesterday that quarterback Derek Carr wanted to stay in New Orleans. Well, just to let you know, ESPN's Catherine Terrell, he has no interest in taking a pay cut to remain there.
Yeah, I don't blame him. It is what it is. And they don't even have a head coach right now.
This is what he told her. So.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, I got to tell y'all about the craziest TV show I think I've ever seen. Let's hit a mic'd up. Real quick, before I get to the TV show, Bo and I talked a little bit last week about I was starting a new NASCAR driver bracket. That did start today on my Twitter if you want to check it out. First driver that I eliminated was Todd Gill, and he didn't stand a chance.
That's not even fair, man.
Josh Berry won the matchup with him in the first round. The play-in round.
Okay, well, that's where he belongs.
The first four,
sorry,
if you will.
Sorry, Todd.
Todd Gillen against Josh Berry. Tomorrow will be Chase Briscoe against Bubba Wallace. So we'll see what happens. That's actually a good first-round matchup, play-in matchup. If I drop the term on y'all, frogging, starts with a PH, frogging. Would y'all know what this is? Frogging.
I know what frog gigging is.
Frog gigging, no. Frogging starts with a PH. So there is a TV show. I don't even know what channel this is on. My wife found it on the Roku search. All right, she hit the search bar on Roku. She goes, "Man, I was told about this TV show. It's crazy. It's a, I guess you would call it a docudrama It's real. It's like real stories, right? If you go back and you watch, it's not a reality show. They're not following people around. It's like real stories.
Other than reenactments.
Yeah, yeah, kind of the prop actors. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But always puts in the corner. This is a reenactment.
Like Dylan, like plays like a murderer on there. He's like, I'm going to hurt you now.
Yes, that's exactly
like
what
Tubi. That's that.
Yeah, that's exactly what
people
I'm talking about. So anyway, so my wife's like, hey, I was told about this TV show. It's called Frogging. And I'm like, what's frog? And she's like, just buckle up because you're about to check thing out. So we pull up this TV show and I'm checking it out, watching it. All right. So it's a family that lives in Hawaii, right? And they're talking about this situation that happened to them. You know how they do the solo shots on camera, and they're like, and it's a stepmom, a husband, two step boys that live in this house in Hawaii. And she's going, you know, it all started and I heard a door slam. At night while I was sleeping, I heard one of the doors slam, and I was telling my husband, but I was like, the door slammed. He's like, you know, it must have been a draft. There must have been some air coming through.
I have that happen in my basement all the time.
Right. Okay. So I kind of was thinking the same thing. And then it happened again on a sliding glass door like a week later. And she's like, did you lock the sliding glass door? He's like, absolutely. I locked it. She goes and checks it. It's not locked. Right. So they get into an argument. She's like, you told me. And he's like, I did lock it. And she's like, well, it's not locked. And I just heard it slam. All right. So follow me here. So you keep going in this. She starts to hear these weird sounds coming throughout the house. And this goes on for a couple of months. Then she's going to the movies one night. She tries to go look for this blanket that's her favorite blanket so she can take it to the movies. She knows it's going to be cold in the movies. It's not there. She looks on the couch. It's not there. They get in a little bit of argument. They're like, where's the blanket? Did the kids take it? Did somebody take it? Did I misplace it? No. When they get back from the movie theater, the blanket is folded up, sitting on the couch right in front of them when they walk in the door. All right, so now even the guy in the situation, the dad in this situation, is like, something's going on. All right, so you kind of move through on this. About a week goes by. She notices the light for her webcam on her laptop is on. So the camera is on her laptop at night, and she notices it when she turns on the lights off. She's like, why is my webcam on? That's weird. Somebody's been using my laptop? I don't know. So she just slams it and kind of moves on throughout her day. All this stuff goes on for a couple of months. They pull back in the driveway. The man's bike, a real nice like road cycling bike, is laying in the driveway. And he's like, I know that I have not touched that bike. All right? So he opens the front door, and it's met with a hand. There is a man living in their home up in the attic and in their closets and has been living there for months. All right? He basically stops the guy from opening the door to his own house and says, hey, man, you've got the wrong house. Guy's like, no, buddy. This is where I live. All right. They call the cops. They get it situated. The guy goes to jail. All right. Gets let out of jail on supervised release. So when they finally get in their house, they find the laptops are all open. All their stuff is set out. And this guy has been logging their activities on their own laptops. Not only that, he's been writing on the laptops about surgeries that he thinks this family needs.
What?
Surgeries that he thinks they need, and that he also has their knives set out in the kitchen. All right?
So he's going to surgically repair them? Right,
so at this point, they're like, oh my God, what is going on? So this guy ends up getting arrested. He gets put back in jail, goes to prison. He broke the law on supervised release. He gets put away. The family moves. They're like, dude.
That's why he went to jail.
Right. It gets even worse. The family moves back to the mainland. They're like, we can't stay in Hawaii. Like, we're creeped out. We wake up every single night. The dude, they find out, they got a call from Hawaii. The dude in prison murdered his cellmate. And, like, this family is, dude. So I don't want to give too much of it away. That's just one of the episodes in this whole thing.
Well, I need some closure.
They essentially are still losing their minds every single night.
But
and the guy has been put away
show.
For life. This is one episode. And it's not like it's a brand new show.
So what is
like,
the
it's
term
like 3 years old.
What
so if you haven't watched it at this point.
Is that what frogging is?
Frogging is living in somebody else's home.
I thought that was a squatter.
Yeah, I don't know.
Squatting is when you you claim it. You make it yours, and then people cannot get back into their own home if they've, it happened with like a renter here in Atlanta. Anyway, we got to go. We got the wake-up call coming up here. 404-726-0929. We'll be right back here in the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.